So no matter what it is, we'll be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Biddle and Brian Clark.
What is up, Sooner Nation? Welcome back to another episode of the Oklahoma Drill. I am the co-host, which typically doesn't do the intro. I'm the quiet guy that sits and watches as my esteemed colleague here, Jesse Crittenden, is typically who does it. But we have some vocal challenges this week. We'll just call it that.
I think I said my voice was... Can I say it? I probably can't say it.
I mean, you can. that is, but a sandwich of the not so tasteful kind.
Not a good sandwich.
But this is another episode of the Oklahoma Drill presented by On3/Rival/... all of that, but also by OU Insider. And we've got quite a bit to talk about. Obviously, last week, Oklahoma suffers their first loss of the year at the Cotton Bowl against Texas, which we'll probably unpack a little bit. And then they get back on the road to South Carolina this week against the Gamecocks and look to pick things back up there. But first of all, Jesse, how are you, man?
I think I said my voice was a not good sandwich. We can put it that way. Yeah. And look, Brian, it's football season. Look, I've got a head cold. But this is when...
Better than a foot cold.
Have you ever had cold feet? Not fun. Look, football season... Parker and I head to Dallas tomorrow before we fly out to South Carolina. This is when the competitive depth gets tested. When you need the championship strain. I know I didn't tell you to give the intro until right before we started recording, but I'll give it a C minus.
Yeah. Hey.
I'll give it a C.
Appreciate that.
How are you, man? How's it going?
Good. I'm good. Life is good. It's busy. Kiddos are growing like crazy, and OU's 5-1. Look, I came into the year saying 9-3. I'm trying to keep that the level head with that. You've got to lose 3 games to be 9-3. So, okay.
Here's what I will say, and you have a different perspective because you're a fan. I was at the OU Texas game. I was there. My review on the new press box, which there is a new press box, is it's very nice. It's in a brutal spot. It's in the corner of the end zone, yeah. So it's not at the 50. Not ideal. But I think, because here's the thing, both things can be true. Like, when you say 9-3, if you predict 9-3 or 10-2, OU has to lose games to have that record, right? So, like, when you lose one, or when Oklahoma loses one, then it feels like a big deal when it shouldn't, because they have to lose that many times. I think the difference, though, is when you lose like that
again.
And also, yes, when it feels like a loss that you've seen before, I think that's why it's still okay for OU fans, even if you predicted 9-3. Mm-hmm. Is that how you're feeling?
Yeah. I mean, look, the last time Oklahoma scored a touchdown against Texas was when Dylan Gabriel connected with Nick Anderson to win the game.
We were there for that. You were on the field for that, right?
That was wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I was not there. Parker was running the camera. I was. Texas was running credentials that year.
Yes, I remember
Brian
that.
Brian had to watch from home. But anyway, right. That was an interesting. Yeah, but just to put it that way, to frame it that way, you've scored 9 points in the other losses to Texas. You're 1-3 under Brent Venables against the Longhorns. It hurts. I mean, it's one of those things. That's one of the games you circle every single year, regardless, and you want to win that one as badly as you do any of them on the schedule. And so I think that part of it is disappointing. And you felt like coming into the game, Oklahoma fans at least, you had a lot of confidence. You were getting Texas in 3-2. Now their season was on the line and all of that stuff. Sure, like I mean, there's plenty of intangibles that go into it. But the bottom line is, if you want to win the SEC, if you want to compete for a national championship, if those are real expectations or real thing, you need to be able to go into a game like that and at the very least be competitive throughout. It was a competitive game up until the punt return, and at that point the wheels kind of came off, but Texas still outplayed Oklahoma, outcoached Oklahoma, and that is not a new story. So yeah, that's frustrating. Everything's still in front of this team though, so you kind of have to, this could be a flush it and move on game. It's just still yet to be seen if this team is able to do that. So
Yeah, I think for me it was weird to just see for it to seem like Oklahoma let go of the rope in the second half, and this was kind of the first time that they'd really been punched in the mouth. I mean, like, yeah, Auburn took the lead in the fourth quarter of that game a month ago, but this was just different. This was, where it's not a home environment, it's a 50-50 environment. And to see, like, the defense played well enough to win, but I thought really on both sides of the ball, you kind of saw the team let go of the rope a little bit. I think that's what surprised me, but and yeah, for them to lose that way. But look, there's a lot that we could talk about from that game and what it means. I wrote a big long thing about the defense. I graded the defense pretty harshly when I did my report card after the game, and then when I went back and watched the film, I was like, I was probably a little harsh on the defense, actually. Here's the thing, though, and this is what everybody wants to talk about, and I wrote a big story about this too. I think in terms of what can you put stock into that game? What are the things to monitor moving forward? It's the rushing offense. Like, to me, that is no holds barred. The biggest thing moving forward, because I think you can feel confident that Oklahoma will fix some of the things defensively, which a lot of it just came down to missed tackles. That's kind of
Correct.
what ended up costing them. I think you can feel confident that won't happen again, or at least not to that degree. But the defense still only gave up 16 offensive points. They only gave up one touchdown. Texas had 114 yards at halftime. Like, there's only so much you can put on the defense. The thing you can't put stock into, because it was not unique to the Texas game, which is that the rushing offense is bad. It's like bad. OU is 106th in rushing offense. They're 116th in yards per carry. They have three plays, rushing plays of 20 yards or more. Only nine Power Four teams have three or fewer 20 plus rushing plays. That to me, and that to me is the thing you put stock into, because that's the thing you've seen throughout the year. And I did a big whole long story on it today for OU Insider. Look, the rotation's weird, the schemes are weird. Ben Arbuckle's offense is also at Washington State didn't run the ball particularly well, so it's not like this is. But to me, that's I think this, and I think this weekend with the South Carolina game is kind of a pivot point. South Carolina's defense, South Carolina ranks 73rd in rushing defense. If you're going to get the running game going at any point this year, it's going to be on Saturday. But to me, that's if OU, basically OU has two thoughts or two things they can do, and I want your thoughts. They can either change up the schemes and try to run the ball a lot differently than they have. That's one. And clean up the rotations as part of that. Or stop running the ball. That's basically their two things. You can't keep doing what you have been doing. because it's not going to work and you're not going to win very many games running the ball like this. So I think that's the thing I'm putting stock into. What do you think?
I think it's hard to scrap what you've done midway through the year. Cause you set up so much off of that. The unfortunate part about it is you're right. Like it has proven it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Like there are some things, that you have built success on. There are, but most of that has been John Mateer just making plays, being athletic. There were a couple of games where it felt, or a couple of plays this last week where it felt like Blaylock found some space. And maybe you just lean heavier on those style, like, you know, that style, but the forcing inside zone over and over again is just not working. Like it's just not. We've seen it time and again, and it didn't even really find that much success against Kent State. So like there's issues there. The problem is Oklahoma isn't hurting for athletes. Like, and so it's just really difficult to, how is that being coached? What is the mentality there, along the offensive line? What's the mentality for, your tight ends, the running backs? What are they being like? I mean, case in point, like here's the thing. The thing that is most frustrating and continues to be and has been and is a conversation we've had dozens of times on this podcast is DeMarco Murray, as good of a recruiter as he is, it has proven at this point there is an issue at the running back position. It's a problem when guys are their best as freshmen. That's a problem. No ways about it. I know he's an alum. He has done so much for this program. But at the end of the day, there has to be a feather in the cap. And that can't just be like a good four-game stretch for somebody. Like if that's what you're hanging your hat on, that's just not the standard at OU. It just isn't.
You can tell both of us have hit a point in the season. Yeah. And I'm sickly, and you can now talk with fan glasses on, and it's all colliding. Look, you're right. I actually think and when you watch like the Oklahoma breakdown and Gabe goes really in depth into these running schemes and stuff, you could see what he's talking about, and those are problems for sure. And there's a lot to dive in there. To me, I think it's the running back rotation, and it just has been. And you're right; we keep talking about it. Case in point, like I was wondering where Javonte Barnes was against Texas because he didn't play. He hasn't played in two games now. Then Brent says he tweaked his hammy or he had a pregame injury before the game against Texas. Yeah. He was listed on the availability report today as questionable. So there's some realness to it. Yep. What that doesn't explain is why he didn't play against Kent State and why the game plan against Kent State was to play Jay Knott 29 snaps, not play Xavier Robinson or Javonte Barnes. Xavier Robinson was an afterthought through the first 5 weeks of the season. Then in the Texas game, you not only play Xavier Robinson as the second running back, he plays on the first series of the game. That's not to say Xavier Robinson isn't a good player. That's not the point. Yeah. The point is, why was the rotation handled that way? You're not giving anybody a chance to have success. And even with Jay Knott, like I can confidently say two things. Two things have happened here. Because he played four snaps against Texas and they were all bad. All four snaps were bad. The experiment hasn't worked and it's done. It's done. And there's a lot of reasons why that hasn't worked. But two things. The experiment is over, and OU didn't really give him a chance. It's kind of both.
Yep.
I mean, it's good they have Blaylock as the number one guy. That's great. But it's just, Why didn't, just because it's Kent State doesn't mean you don't do the rotation you're going to want to do all season. That stuff just doesn't make sense to me.
No, it doesn't. Well, and here's the thing, just to add more to that, is if it's 3 hours on Saturday is like 10% of what we get to see.
Yeah.
So if it's that clunky and that messed up on Saturdays, what does it look like Monday through Thursday? Because to me, that you're seeing the results of, it's just been mishandled. I don't know how else to put it. I know that sounds blunt, but like it is, it's been mishandled. And with Jay not, I went to defend the rotation in the Texas game for the fact that Texas brought more pressure than it seemed like was going to happen coming into the game, because they were bottom of the SEC in pressure rate, and then, you know, they start really lighting up Mateer, and so you want guys in there that are better in pass pro. But like when Xavier Robinson is out there in the first drive and hasn't been, I mean, it's ad nauseum at this point. I think you understand my point. Something has got to give, and I think you give DeMarco as much, I think you give DeMarco Murray as much leeway and as much, I mean, he has credibility. He's got all kinds of talent in that room. You have to take that into account whenever you're talking about position coaching changes and things like that, because it's not a guarantee that anybody stays. But at the same time, the proof's in the pudding, man. The offense isn't good enough, and it's because the football is not being run well.
That's, look, and I think that's because here's the thing. If Oklahoma wins this weekend, things will feel, if you're a fan, things will feel so much better, right?
Sure.
South Carolina is not a very good football team from an SEC standpoint. They're not a very good football team. Oklahoma is a 5.5 point favorite on the road for a reason, because people see Oklahoma as a better football team. And I think they are. I think Oklahoma's just a better football team.
Yeah.
But if you win this weekend, things feel better. All of a sudden you're 6-1, you're still in the top 15, 9-3 feels. All you gotta do is go 3-2 over your last five games. Not easy, but certainly doable. Certainly doable. I think the thing that can be frustrating, though, is, again, it's a bad loss again against Texas due to the same things that have been on the field for years.
Yeah.
Where the offense just wasn't good enough. The offense just wasn't good enough.
And on top of that, the clock management issues that I thought were gone.
God, that was abysmal.
They just show up in the worst time. And what doesn't make sense for me is there's so much emphasis placed on the middle eight. So much, like, literally is talked about all the time how important that is. And it's true. We've seen that at all levels of the sport. If you can dominate those last four of the first half and first four of the second half, you've got a really good chance of winning tight ball games. Botched, totally dominated on both ends of that. Oklahoma didn't see the ball in the second half until halfway through the third quarter. So, like, to me, it just really felt like all the air was sucked out of that team whenever the final drive of the first half went the way that it did.
I think if you were, I mean, I was in the press box as that was happening, and I'm sitting by several of the other reporters, and we're all, as it's happening, like, what are they doing? What are they doing? What's going on? And then, I think if you, I think if you were to really ask yourself going into halftime, is Oklahoma going to win the game? I think the real answer was probably not, you know. Having said all that, look, because look, there's offensive line issues. Domitier wasn't very good. The thing is, Oklahoma's got to find a way to move forward, because again, if you win this weekend, things feel fine. Things feel fine. Even if it's by 1 point and you play awful and you still win, doesn't matter. Things will feel fine. When I look at this matchup, though, this is super interesting. Part of it because of timing, because I think in some ways Oklahoma is very well equipped to handle the South Carolina team in several very obvious ways. South Carolina's offense is not very good. Basically, in point to a metric, they're not very good. Defensively, they're like, that's my analysis.
They're not what they were last year.
No, they're not. Yeah. However, they are two things that could really hurt Oklahoma. Lenora Sellers can get out of the pocket, can escape pressure, and run and make plays. That's what Arch Manning did last week. That's what OU struggled with.
Yep.
And South Carolina's defensive line is probably better than Texas's. Even their DNs. The combination, the defensive ends that Oklahoma will face this weekend are probably as good as they will face all year.
Mm-hmm.
And we just saw OU's offensive line have issues blocking Texas, especially in their running game.
Yep.
So I kind of don't know. Like, to me, it's like, to me, I think Oklahoma's the better football team, but to me, the issues that came up in the Texas game that were exposed could easily be exposed in this game too. Mm-hmm. That's kind of why it's an interesting game to think about. When you think about this weekend, what do you think about?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first and foremost, thank the good Lord that Derek Simmons wasn't on the...
That's a big deal.
I mean...
That's a really big deal.
So much pressure came from the right side after he was gone. I mean, and look, that's a tough spot. Baklenko is probably your third best guy at that position, maybe fourth if everybody's healthy. So that's a tough spot to put him in, but I think it's huge to have Simmons back. I also think it's important that Mateer is, look, crimson colored glasses going into last week. I think a lot of us were wearing those, that if he was going to show up, that he would just be the same guy that he was beforehand without any sputters. You kind of have that expectation. And I think we saw just how important the process is. Like, that's probably the easiest way to put it. You can't just... Baker Mayfield doing what he did in LA for the Rams was such an odd thing for a reason. You don't get to just jump right into things and have success. Like, I mean, that was an oddity. And we saw the flip side of the script, which happens 99% of the time. When somebody kind of just jumps in and doesn't have a chance to prepare, because you can throw, you can have all you can have all of. I would say velocity wasn't an issue. Didn't look like hand grip was an issue. You could just tell that he was off kilter. He didn't practice in team. The speed was a little faster than he was ready for. And let's not forget, that was his second game against an SEC defense. So, like, let's call it what it is. That's a step up. The athletes that he faced, yes, Michigan's got great athletes. Auburn's got great athletes. They don't have a Colin Simmons. They don't.
Anthony Hill.
Yeah, Anthony Hill. You don't have. And so I think that was that was unforeseen for me, at least. And so going into this week, having him be able to practice for a full week, look at the film, look at a hard reset. It's kind of, Oklahoma's not in the same position that Texas was coming into last week, because I don't think their season's on the line by any means. But like, you gotta win this game. You have to. Like, if you're gonna keep everything in front of you fall to 5-2 this week with what you have left on the schedule, sound the alarms. Like, it is it we don't wanna have that discussion. Ole Miss coming to town. You got Bama looking the way that they do, Missouri looking the way that they do. Like, things get tough, and you had better figure some things out this week. And so, yeah, going into this week, I think this game's vitally important on the offensive side of the ball. Thank your lucky stars that Simmons is back. I think that's huge.
It really is huge, and that goes to what I think. I actually think there were two things I took away from the Texas game that I'm going to be monitoring. And number one was the running game, and two, it's just the reliance on John Metier, just their reliance on John Metier. And I think the Texas game, to me, what the Texas game showed was two things: if the defense doesn't play perfectly, OU has a hard chance to win. If John Metier doesn't play really well, Oklahoma has a hard chance to win, or has a difficult chance, or a difficult time winning. And I get that, like, you need your quarterback to play well.
Well,
I'm not.
and that's yeah, that goes for every team in the SEC. That there's just no margin for error. Like, it just is what it is.
But the reason why it's specifically on John Metier is because the running game is so bad.
Correct. Yep.
And I think it makes an interesting pivot point, because John Metier is a mistake prone quarterback. I don't know if mistake prone isn't the right word, but
He fits gunslinger. He fits that. That's a
he's gonna turn the ball over once or twice a game. Going back to his Washington State days, that's what's gonna happen. Now, he usually offsets that with enough explosive plays and dual threat abilities that you live with that. The problem against Texas is he didn't offset those mistakes enough. And not only just the picks, not only just the turnovers, but it was also just the decision making. He usually can offset bad mistakes with, it seems almost contradictory, but good decisions. Or good field awareness, or the right amount of risk taking, that sometimes that risk taking is going to bite you, but also it's going to pay off for you really well. To me, that's when I go into this weekend, I'm thinking, man, there's ways that South Carolina can put pressure on him quickly. And what's his field vision going to be like? I asked Ben Arbuckle about that on Tuesday. John Metier mentioned his eyes weren't good. That's the problem. How do you reset that? And you mentioned it's a total reset. But unless the running game gets going, they're going to live and die by John Metier's decision making. Also, you're probably not going to have OU's probably not going to have Keontaez Lewis this weekend. He's listed as doubtful. It's crazy at all that he played against Texas. But that was the other thing I put stock into, is can OU make this in a way where John Metier doesn't have to play really well? Is there any scenario where John Metier can have a good game, an average game, and Oklahoma still find a way to win? You know? And that's why, to me, I'm not only curious about his bounce back, but I'm curious about how much are they asking of him offensively, and with these offensive line issues, how much time is he going to have? You know?
Well, and the other thing that I think I put on display that will be something to watch, is Oklahoma in three of their, no, four of their six games to this point has had the distinct advantage in special teams. When that does not fall in their favor, particularly whenever it ends up putting more points on the board for the other team, I don't think the offense is good enough to overcome that. It's just not. You're asking a lot from the defense, and you can live with that if you win in special teams as well. But if you lose the special teams battle, and then you have the offense not being able to pull its weight against a good defense, You're putting too much on. I don't care how good the defense. I still firmly believe Oklahoma has one of the best, if not the best, defenses in the country. You just can't put them in a spot like you did on Saturday. You just can't. They played really well. You just said it. They had one touchdown scored against them. The missed tackles were an issue. That is something that just happens every once in a while. I mean, it just does for everybody. And so I don't expect that to be an issue that continues. I still think it's one of the best units in college football. But your offense right now is lethargic. And so if you don't win special teams, you're going to have a hard time winning competitive football games. And so you got to, you have to out Beamer Shane Beamer this week. You just do.
I mean, I think the reality is if I asked you, would you take the rest of the way if I could guarantee the defense only gives up 16 points every game from here on out? Do you take that? I think the answer would overwhelmingly be yes. So the offense is basically, it's like, can the offense score 21 points this weekend and beyond? 21 or more. I really don't know what to expect on Saturday because I think Brent Venables said the right things on Tuesday. I think it was very clear that getting your ass beat by Texas again is certainly going to make these guys feel a certain way. It's going to make Brent
Yeah, it
Venables feel a
stings.
certain way.
Yeah.
OU's record post Texas under Brent Venables has not been very good. I don't know how much stock I put into that, but it's not. It hasn't been very good. But that's this. It's gonna be easy to say that every game can be a must-win game. At Bama is not gonna be a must-win game. At Tennessee is not gonna be a must-win game. Weekend is a must-win game. This weekend is a must-win
If
game.
you, yeah, if you want to keep any of those goals ahead of you, absolutely.
And I think this is a big prove it game for this offense
It is.
because you're going to play better defenses as good as South Carolina's defensive line is. And it's good. It's really good. You're going to play, I mean, you're going to play better defenses. And to me, this is the game where it kind of all has to come together. It all has to come together. And doing it on the road, it's not a late kick. Oh, you got lucky in that regard. I'm very excited to go to South Carolina. I've heard it's awesome. I'm not super thrilled
Jealous.
about the not super thrilled about the travel. I think we fly out at 5:30 in the morning on Friday. Thanks, Parker. I'm not thrilled about that, but I'm thrilled about going to South Carolina. In terms of response games, I am so intrigued to see how OU responds. Get the analysis out of here. I'm done analyzing. I'm so curious to how OU responds to this game. I'm
Yeah,
so
because
curious.
As much as you want to point to the coaches, as much as you want to point to the coaches to be the guys to get the rest of the team up, and pull them back into battle and move on, what kind of leader do you have in Jon Mattier? Because look, he took his lumps this last week. Part of that was his. I mean, he played a big role in that loss, like it or not. What kind of leader is he? Is he a guy that can overcome the adversity and pull the rest of his team up with him, overcome that, put it behind him, and move on? This is your first opportunity to see that because, like you said, the adversity that they faced against Auburn was one thing. Yes, they had to overcome a small lead and win that football game. Okay, now you've lost a game. Nobody's talking about you anymore. You're not the darling anymore that you were. It's more a question of, does this team have what it takes? Can Oklahoma's offense do enough? The narrative has shifted from Jon Mattier can be a Heisman winner to, does he have enough in the tank to get this defense over the line for a playoff spot? And that narrative, I think, is right now. Oklahomans are very spiteful people. I would know because I've been around them for 30 years. This is an opportunity to prove those who are doubting you wrong. And I think if there's any sort of mentality that you would need as the Oklahoma football team, going into this game, you've got it. You have an opportunity to show up and get things back on track. So we'll see.
Agree, because here's the thing. South Carolina's 3-3. I actually think they might be the worst SEC team that Oklahoma faces all year, and I include Auburn in that. That might be controversial. South Carolina's still a good football team. They're 3-3. If they lose this weekend, they are 3-4. And the expectations were pretty high for South Carolina coming into
Yeah,
the
they were
year.
borderline top 10 team.
Yeah. And you think they want to fall to 3-4 at home? No, they don't. If Oklahoma wins this weekend, that not only would be really impressive to do that, but to me, I analyzing this team can, if Oklahoma wins this weekend, regardless of how it happens, if they just win, I can say, yeah, 9-3 is
Attainable.
doable. Not 9-3 is more than doable. 9-3 is more than doable. Hell, 10-2. Don't like. I'm not saying expect it, but why not? If you go and win this game, why not? If you lose this weekend, you look at the rest of the schedule, and it's crazy how much 1 week can change things. Again, it's not that they lost to Texas. If it was 23-20 and Texas makes a play late and that proves to be the difference, right? Or OU's offense is driving late, but they come up just short, right? Things would feel a whole lot different. It's because the offense looked like that and you got beat double digits to Texas again. That's why things feel this way. But if they're able to come back from that and win, then I think you can feel like, okay, the Texas game sucked, but as fans, we're moving forward. If you don't, the pressure on this program all of a sudden in 2 weeks is going to go up like crazy.
Because if Because I can just paint the picture for you now. I can hear it. I can see it on Twitter. You missed on Jaden Nott. John Mateer isn't who you thought he was. Your offensive coordinator can't run the, like. I mean, it piles up quick. And talk about things turning on you quickly. Don't know if you heard this or not, but. Guy up there in University Park just lost his job and they paid him $50 million to get him out of town. So pressure is on college football coaches more than it ever has been. I think if you lose this game, you really start hearing some grumbling at a level that maybe you haven't to this point from the fan base. Because I think right now is a pivot point for the fan base as far as supporting the current regime.
Oh, you're exactly right, because 5-2 would still even sound okay, but then when you put it in the context of three and or excuse me, 2-2 against Power Four teams, and with another loss to Texas, a third loss in 4 years.
Well, and it the narrative would be, well, because presuming John Mateer's gonna have to make some mistakes for Oklahoma to lose this game. Like that's how I see it. If
Yes.
Oklahoma's so the narrative will be, well, John Mateer is 1-2 against SEC teams. Jaden Nott is an afterthought. The offensive line is still bad. There's just so many things that ride narrative wise on Oklahoma winning this game because everything is overreacted to week to week. And this is guys like, let's pull back at 10,000 feet and look down at this thing. This is what SEC football is.
Yeah.
This is this like welcome to it. Not that it's just a gauntlet, but every single week the narrative changes and shifts. Think about it with Alabama.
Yeah.
Think about how much that has
Yeah.
gone from way up here, gets beat by Florida State, and now they're on the rise. Like, I mean, that is, you just never heard that in the other league, in the Big 12. It just, it wasn't that, but every week is so pivotal. And Oklahoma's feeling that. It's time to go prove it.
I think that's going to do it for us here on this episode of the Oklahoma Drill. Appreciate you guys tuning in, listening to my sickly voice, but just like the competitive depth, the championship strain that you've come to expect, I will be in South Carolina this weekend. I will be in Columbia to bring you guys coverage from what is a very pivotal, very interesting, very intriguing game this weekend. Appreciate you guys tuning in. As always, make sure to like and subscribe here to the OU Insider YouTube channel. Go over to OU Insider, become a VIP member today. Brian, thanks, man. Appreciate you, dude. As always,
absolutely.
Thanks for doing the intro, man. You know what? I was too hard on you earlier. You got an A+ for that intro.
Appreciate
Thank you, man.
Appreciate
you guys as always. We'll see you guys next week on the Oklahoma Drill. Until then, you guys take care.